facts here. We're just telling stories like they really happen. I turn off the radio, take Minnie's hand in mine. We sat like that. Minnie staring at the brown moth pressed up on the wall. Me staring at that flap of red meat left dry in the pan. Minnie got the most lonesome look in her eyes. I wish Leroy was home, she whispered. I doubt if them words ever been said in this house before. For days and days, Jackson, Mississippi's like a pot of boiling water. On Miss Leifold's TV, flocks of colored people march up High Street the day after Mr. Evers' funeral. 300 arrested. Colored papers say thousands of people came to the service, but you could count the whites on one hand. The police know who did it, but they ain't telling nobody his name. I come to find that the Evers family ain't burying Medgar in Mississippi. His body's going to Washington, to the Arlington Cemetery, and I reckon Merle real proud of that, she should be. But I want him here, close by. In the newspaper, I read how even the President of the United States telling Mayor Thompson he need to do better. Put a committee together with blacks and whites and work things out down here. But Mayor Thompson, he say to President Kennedy, I am not going to appoint a biracial committee. Let's not kid ourselves. I believe in the separation of the races, and that's the way it's going to be. A few days later, the mayor come on the radio again. Jackson, Mississippi is the closest place to heaven there is, he say. And it's going to be like this for the rest of our lives. For the second time in 2 months, Jackson, Mississippi is in the Life magazine. This time, though, we make the cover. Chapter 15. None of the Medgar Evers talk come up in Miss Leifold's house. I change the station when she come back from her lunch meeting. We go on like it's a nice summer afternoon. I still ain't heard hide nor hair from Miss Hilly, and I'm sick of the worry that's always in my head. A day after the Evers' funeral, Miss Leifold's mama stopped by for a visit. She live up in Greenwood, Mississippi, and she driving down to New Orleans. She don't knock. Miss Fredericks just waltz on in the living room where I'm ironing. She give me a lemony smile. I go tell Miss Leifold who here.
Mama, you're so early. You must have gotten up at the crack of dawn this morning. I hope you didn't tire yourself out.
Miss Leifold say, rushing into the living room, picking up toys as fast as she can. She shoot me a look that say, now. I put Mr. Leifold's wrinkled shirts in a basket, get a cloth for baby girl's face to wipe off the jelly.
And you look so fresh and stylish this morning, Mama.
Miss Leifold smiling so hard she getting bug-eyed.
Are you excited about your shopping trip?
From the good Buick she drive and her nice buckle shoes, I expect Miss Frederick's got a lot more money than Mr. and Miss Leifold do.
I wanted to break up the drive, and I was hoping you'd take me to the Robert E. Lee for lunch, Miss Fredericks say.
I don't know how this woman can stand her own self. I heard Mr. and Miss Leifold arguing about how every time she come to town, she make Miss Leifold take her to the fanciest place in town and then sit back and make Miss Leifold pay the bill. Miss Leifold say,
oh, why don't we have Abilene fix us lunch here? We have a real nice ham and some...
I stopped by to go out to lunch, not to eat here.
All right. All right, Mama, let me just go get my handbag.
Miss Fredericks looked down at Mae Mobley playing with her baby doll, Claudia, on the floor. She bend down and give her a hug, say, Mae Mobley, did you like that smock dress I sent over last week?
Yeah,
baby girl say to her grandmama. I hated showing Miss Leifold how tight that dress was around the middle. Baby girl getting plumper.
Miss Frederick, she scowled down at May Mobley. You say yes, ma'am, young lady. Do you hear me? May Mobley, she get a dull look on her face, say, yes, ma'am. But I know what she thinking. She thinking, great, just what I need today. Another lady in this house who don't like me. They head out the door with Miss Frederick's pinching the back of Miss Leafoat's arm. You don't know how to hire proper help, Elizabeth. It is her job to make sure May Mobley has good manners.
All right, Mama, we'll work on it.
You can't just hire anybody and hope you get lucky.
After a while, I fixed baby girl that ham sandwich Miss Frederick's too good to eat. But May Mobley only take one bite, push it away.
I don't feel good. My throat hurts, A.B.
I know what a throat is, and I know how to fix it. Baby girl getting a summer cold. I heat her up a cup of honey water, a little lemon in it to make it good. But what this girl really needs is a story so she can go to sleep. I lift her up in my arms. Law, she getting big. Gonna be 3 years old in a few months. And pudgy as a pumpkin. Every afternoon, me and baby girl sit in the rocking chair before her nap. Every afternoon, I tell her, you kind, you smart, you important. But she growing up, and I know soon, them few words ain't gonna be enough.
A.B., read me a story.
I look through the books to see what I'm gonna read to her. I can't read that Curious George one more time because she don't want to hear it. Or Chicken Little or Madeline neither. So we just rock in the chair a while. May Mobley lean her head against my uniform. We watch the rain dripping on the water left in the green plastic pool. I say a prayer for Merle Evers, wishing I'd had work off to go to the funeral. I think on how her 10-year-old son, somebody told me, had cried so quiet through the whole thing. I rock and pray, feeling so sad. I don't know. Something just come over me. The words just come out. Once upon a time, there was two little girls, I say. One girl had black skin. One girl had white. May Mobley look up at me. She listening. Little colored girl say to the little white girl, how come your skin be so pale? White girl say, I don't know. How come your skin be so black? What you think that mean? But neither one of them little girls knew. So little white girl say, well, let's see. You got hair, I got hair. I gives May Mobley a little tousle on her head. Little colored girl say, I got a nose, you got a nose. I gives a little snout a tweak. She got to reach up and do the same to me. Little white girl say, I got toes, you got toes. And I do the little thing with her toes, but she can't get to mine because I got my white work shoes on. So we's the same, just a different color. Said the little colored girl. The little white girl, she agreed, and they was friends. The end. Baby girl, just look at me. Law, that was a sorry story if I ever heard one. Wasn't even no plot to it. But May Mobley, she smile and say, tell it again. So I do. By the fourth time she asleep, I whisper, I'm gonna tell you a better one next time.
Don't we have more towels, Abilene? This one's fine, but we can't take this old ratty thing. I'd be embarrassed to death. I guess we'll just take the one, then.
Miss Leafoat all in a tizzy. She and Mr. Leafoat don't belong to no swim club, not even the dinky Broadmoor pool. Miss Hilly called this morning and asked if she and baby girl want to go swimming at the Jackson Country Club, and that's an invitation Miss Leafoat ain't had but once or twice. I've probably been there more times than she has. You can't use paper money there. You got to be a member and charge it to your account. And one thing I know about Miss Hilly is she don't like to carry nobody's costs. I reckon Miss Hilly got other ladies she go to the country club with, ones who got the memberships. We still ain't heard another word about the satchel. Ain't even seen Miss Hilly in 5 days. Neither has Miss Skeeter, which is bad. They supposed to be best friends. Miss Skeeter, she brung over the first mini chapter last night. Miss Walter was no cup of tea, and if Miss Hilly saw anything relating to that, I don't know what's going to happen to us. I just hope Miss Skeeter ain't too scared to tell me if she heard anything new. I put baby girl's yellow bikini on. You got to keep your top on now. They don't let no naked baby swim at the country club. Nor Negroes, nor Jews. I used to work for the Goldmans. The Jackson Jews got to swim at the Colonial Country Club. The Negroes in Maze Lake. I feed baby girl a peanut butter sandwich and the phone ring. Miss Leafholt residence. Abilene, hey, it's Skeeter. Is Elizabeth there? Hey, Miss Skeeter. I look over at Miss Leafholt, about to hand her the phone, but she wave her hands. She shake her head and mouth. No. Tell her I'm not here. She gone, Miss Skeeter, I say, and I look Miss Leafholt right in the eye while I tell her lie. I don't understand it. Miss Skeeter, a member of the club. Wouldn't be no trouble inviting her. At noontime, we all three get in Miss Leafholt's blue Ford Fairlane. On the back seat next to us, I got a bag with a thermos of apple juice, cheese nabs, peanuts, and 2 Coca-Cola bottles that's gonna be like drinking coffee, they gonna be so hot. I expect Miss Leafholt know Miss Hilly ain't gonna be pushing us to the snack bar. Law knows why she invite her today. Baby girl ride in my lap in the back seat. I crank the window down, let the warm air blow on our faces. Miss Leafholt keep poofing her hair up. She a stop-and-go driver, and I feel nauseous. Wish she'd just keep both hands on the wheel. We pass the Ben Franklin 5 and Dime, the Seal Lily ice cream drive-thru. They got a sliding window on the back so colored folk can get our ice cream, too. My legs is sweating with baby girl sitting on me. After a while, we on a long, bumpy road with pasture on both sides. Cows flapping at the flies with their tails. We count us 26 cows, but Mae Mobley just call out 10 after the first 9. That's high as she know. About 15 minutes later, we pull onto a paved drive. The club's a low, white building with prickle bushes around it. Not nearly so fancy as folks talk about it. There's plenty of parking places up front, but Miss Leafholt think on it a second. Park a ways back. We step out onto the blacktop, feel the heat cover us. I got the paper sack in one hand, Mae Mobley's hand in the other, and we trudge across the steaming black lot. Grid lines make it like we on a charcoal grill, roasting like corn cobs. My face getting tight, burning in the sun. Baby girl lagging back on my hand, looking stunned like she just got slapped. Miss Leafholt panting and frowning at the door. Still 20 yards away, wondering, I reckon, why she parked so far. The part in my hair get to burning, then itching, but I can't scratch at it 'cause both hands is full when, whoo, somebody blow out the flame. The lobby's dark, cool, heaven. We blink a while. Miss Leafholt look around, blind and shy. So I point to the side door. Pull that away, ma'am. She looked grateful I know my way around, so she don't have to ask, like po' folk. We push open the door, and the sun flash in our eyes again. But it's nice, cooler. The swimming pool shining blue. The black and white striped awnings look clean. The air smell like laundry soap. Kids is laughing and splashing, and ladies is laying around in their swimsuits and sunglasses, reading magazines. Miss Leafholt roof her eyes and spy around for Miss Hilly. She got a white floppy hat on, black and white polka dot dress, clunky white buckle sandals a size too big for her feet. She frowning 'cause she feel out of place, but smiling 'cause she don't want nobody to know it. There she is. We follow Miss Leafolt around the pool to where Miss Hilly is in a red bathing suit. She laid out on a lounge chair watching her kids swim. I see two maids I don't know with other families, but not Yule May. There y'all are, Miss Hilly say. Why, May Mobley, don't you look like a little butterball in that bikini? Abilene, the kids are right there in the baby pool. You can sit in the shade back yonder and look after them. Don't let William splash the girls now. Miss Leafolt lay down on the lounge chair next to Miss Hilly, and I sat at the table under an umbrella, few feet behind the ladies. I popped my hose away from my legs to dry the sweat. I'm in a pretty good position for hearing what they say. Yule May, Miss Hilly shake her head at Miss Leafolt, another day off. I tell you, that girl is pushing it with me. Well, that's one mystery solved. Miss Hilly invite Miss Leafolt to the pool 'cause she knows she bring me. Miss Hilly pour more cocoa butter on her plump tan legs, rub it around. She already so greasy, she shining. I am so ready to get down to the coast, Miss Hilly say. 3 weeks at the beach. I wish Raleigh's family had a house down there, Miss Leafolt sigh. She pull her dress up a little to sun her white knees. She can't wear no bathing suit, since she pregnant. Of course we have to pay the bus fare to get you May back up here on the weekends. $8. I ought to take it out of her pay. The kids yell they want to get in the big pool now. I pull May Mobley's styrofoam bubble out the bag, fasten it around her tummy. Miss Hilly hand me two more and I put one on William and Heather, too. They get in the big pool and float around like a bunch of fishing corks. Miss Hilly look at me say, aren't they the cutest things? And I nod, they sure is. Even Miss Leafolt nodding. They talk and I listen, but they ain't no mention of Miss Skeeter or Satchel. After a while, Miss Hilly send me to the snack window to get cherry Coca-Colas for everyone, even myself. After a while, the locusts in the trees start humming, the shade get cooler, and I feel my eyes trained on the kids in the pool start to sag.
A.B., watch me! Looky at me!
I focus my eyes, smile at May Mobley funning around. And that's when I see Miss Skeeter, back behind the pool outside the fence. She got on her tennis skirt and her racket in her hand. She's staring at Miss Hilly and Miss Leafolt, tilting her head like she's sorting something out. Miss Hilly and Miss Leafolt, they don't see her. They still talking about Biloxi. I watch Miss Skeeter come in the gate, walk around the pool. Pretty soon she's standing right in front of them and they still don't see her.
Hey, y'all,
Miss Skeeter say. She got sweat running down her arms. Her face is pink and swolled up in the sun. Miss Hilly look up, but she stays stretched out on her pool chair, magazine in her hand. Miss Leafolt jump up off her chair and stand up.
Hey, Skeeter! Why, I didn't, we tried to call.
Her teeth just about chattering, she's smiling so big. Hey, Elizabeth.
Tennis?
Miss Leafolt asked, nodding her head like she a doll on a dashboard.
Who are you playing with?
I was hitting balls on the backboard by myself, Miss Skeeter say. She blow a thicket of hair off her forehead, but it's stuck. She don't move out the sun, though.
Hilly,
Miss Skeeter say.
Did you May tell you I called?
Hilly smile kind of tight. She's off today. I called you yesterday, too. Look, Skeeter, I didn't have time. I've been at the campaign HQ since Wednesday, addressing envelopes to practically every white person in Jackson.
All right,
Miss Skeeter nod. Then she squint, say,
Hilly, did I do something to upset you?
And I feel my fingers jiggling again, twirling that dumb invisible pencil. Miss Hilly closed her magazine, put it on the concrete so she don't get her grease on it. This should be discussed at a later time, Skeeter. Miss Leafold sit back down real quick. She pick up Miss Hilly's Good Housekeeping, start reading it like she ain't never seen nothing so important. All right, Miss Skeeter shrug. I just thought we could talk about whatever this is before you go out of town. Miss Hilly about to protest, but then she let out a long sigh. Why don't you just tell me the truth, Skeeter?
The truth about what?
Look, I found that paraphernalia of yours. I swallow hard. Miss Hilly trying to whisper, but she really ain't no good at it. Miss Skeeter keep her eyes on Hilly. She real calm, don't look up at me at all. What paraphernalia do you mean? In your satchel, when I was hunting for the minutes. And Skeeter, she flashed her eyes up at the sky and back down. I don't know. I just do not know anymore.
Hilly, what are you talking about? What did you see in my satchel?
I look out at the kids. Law, I almost forgot about them. I feel like I'm going to faint listening to this.
Those laws you were carrying around? About what the...
Miss Hilly looked back at me. I keep my eyes trained on the pool. What those other people can and cannot do? And frankly, she hissed, I think it's downright pig-headed of you to think you know better than our government, than Ross Barnett.
When did I ever say a word about Ross Barnett?
Miss Skeeter say. Miss Hilly wag her finger up at Miss Skeeter. Miss Leafold staring at the same page, same line, same word. I got the whole scene fixed in a corner of my eye. You are not a politician, Skeeter Phelan.
Well, neither are you, Hilly.
Miss Hilly stand up then. She point her finger to the ground. I am about to be a politician's wife, unless you have anything to do with it. How is William ever going to get elected in Washington, D.C. one day if we have integrational friends in our closet?
Washington?
Miss Skeeter rolled her eyes. William's running for the local Senate, Hilly, and he might not win.
Oh, law, I finally let myself look at Miss Skeeter. Why are you doing this? Why are you pushing her hot button?
Oh, Miss Hilly mad now. She snapped her head straight. You know well as I do there are good tax-paying white people in this town who would fight you to the death on this. You want to let them get in our swimming pools? Let them put their hands on everything in our grocery stores?
Miss Skeeter stared long and hard at Miss Hilly. Then for one half a second, Miss Skeeter glanced at me, see the pleading in my eyes. Her shoulders eased back some.
Oh, Hilly, it's just a booklet. I found it at the darn library. I'm not trying to change any laws. I just took it home to read.
Miss Hilly, take this in a second. But if you're looking at those laws...
Miss Hilly snapped the leg of her bathing suit that's crept up her behind. I have to wonder what else are you up to?
Miss Skeeter shift her eyes away, lick her lips.
Hilly, you know me better than anybody else in this world. If I was up to something, you'd have me figured out in half a second.
Miss Hilly just watch her. Then Miss Skeeter grabbed Miss Hilly's hand and squeeze it. I am worried about you. You disappear for an entire week. You're working yourself to death on this campaign. Look at that.
Miss Skeeter turned Miss Hilly's palm over. You have a blister from addressing all those envelopes.
And real slow, I watch Miss Hilly's body slump down, start to give in on itself. She looked to make sure Miss Leafold ain't listening.
I'm just so scared, Miss Hilly whispered through her teeth. I can't hear much. piled so much money in this campaign. If William doesn't win, been working day and... Miss Skeeter lay a hand on Miss Hilly's shoulder, say something to her. Miss Hilly nod and give her a tired smile. After a while, Miss Skeeter tell them she got to go. She head off through the sunbathers, winding through the chairs and the towels. Miss Leafolt look over at Miss Hilly with big eyes, like she's scared to ask any questions. I lean back in my chair, wave to Mae Mobley making twirlies in the water. I try to rub the headache out my temples. Across the way, Miss Skeeter looked back at me. Everybody around us is sunning and laughing and squinting. Not a soul guessing that the colored woman and the white woman with the tennis racket is wondering the same thing. Is we fools to feel some relief? Chapter 16. About a year after Treloar died, I started going to the community concerns meeting at my church. I reckon I started doing it to fill time, keep the evenings from getting so lonely. Even though Shirley Boone, with her big know-it-all smile, kinda irritate me. Many don't like Shirley neither, but she usually come anyway to get out the house. But Benny got the asthma tonight, so Minnie ain't gonna make it. Lately, the meetings is more about civil rights than keeping the streets clean and who gonna work at the clothing exchange. It ain't aggressive. Mostly people just talking things out, praying about it. But after Mr. Evers got shot a week ago, a lot of colored folks is frustrated in this town. Especially the younger ones, who ain't built up a callus to it yet. They done had meetings all week over the killing. I hear folks was angry, yelling, crying. This the first one I come to since the shooting. I walk down the steps to the basement. Generally, it's cooler than up in the church. But it's warm down here tonight. Folks is putting ice cubes in their coffee. I look around to see who's here, reckoning I better ask some more maids to help us now that it looked like we squeaked by Miss Hilly. 35 maids done said no, and I feel like I'm selling something nobody want to buy. Something big and stanky, like Kiki Brown and her lemon smell good polish. But what really makes me and Kiki the same is I'm proud of what I'm selling. I can't help it. We telling stories that need to be told. I wish Minnie could help me ask people. Minnie know how to put a sell on. But we decided from the start nobody needs to know Minnie's a part of this. It's just too risky for her family. We felt like we had to tell folks it was Miss Skeeter, though. Nobody would agree if they didn't know who the white lady was, wondering if they knew her or had worked for her. But Miss Skeeter can't do the front sell. She'd scare 'em off before she even opened her mouth. So it's up to me, and it didn't take but 5 or 6 maids before everybody already know what I'm gonna ask before I get 3 words out my mouth. They say it ain't worth it. They ask me why I'd put my own self at risk when it ain't gonna do no good. I reckon people's are starting to think old Abilene's basket ain't got many pawpaws left in it. All the wooden fold chairs is full tonight. There's over 50 people here, mostly women's. Sit down by me, Abilene, Bertrina Bessemer say. Goldella, let the older folk have the chairs. Goldella jump up, motion me down. At least Bertrina still treating me like I ain't crazy. I settle in. Tonight, Shirley Boone sitting down and the deacon standing at the front. He say we need a quiet prayer meeting tonight. Say we need to heal. I'm glad for it. We close our eyes and the deacon leads us in a prayer for the Everses, for Merle, for the sons. Some folks is whispering, murmuring to God, and a quiet power fill up the room like bees buzzing on a comb. I say my prayers to myself. When I'm done, I take a deep breath, wait for the others to finish. When I get home tonight, I'll write my prayers, too. This is worth the double time. Yule May, Miss Hilly's maid, sitting in front of me. Yule May easy to recognize from the back, 'cause she got such good hair. Smooth, no nap to it. I hear she educated and went through most of college. Of course, we got plenty of smart people in our church with their college degrees. Doctors, lawyers. Mr. Cross, who owned the Southern Times, the colored newspaper that come out every week. But Yule May, she probably the most educated maid we got in our parish. Seeing her makes me think again about the wrong I need to right. The deacon opened his eyes, looked out on us all real quiet. The prayers we are say, Deacon Thorogood. A deep voice boomed through stillness. I turn, everybody turn, and there's Jessup, Plantain Fidelia's grandson, standing in the doorway. He 22, 23. He got his hands in thick fists. What I want to know is, he say slow, angry, what we plan to do about it. Deacon got a stern look on his face like he done talked with Jessup before. Tonight, we are going to lift our prayers to God. We will march peacefully down the streets of Jackson next Tuesday. And in August, I will see you in Washington to march with Dr. King. That is not enough, Jessup say, banging his fist on his hand. They shot him in the back like a dog. Jessup, Deacon raised his hand. Tonight is for prayer. For the family, for the lawyers on the case. I understand your anger, but son, prayer? You mean y'all just gonna sit around and pray about it? He look around at all of us in our chairs. Y'all think prayer's gonna keep white people from killing us? No one answer, not even the deacon. Jessup just turn and leave. We all hear his feet stomping up the stairs and then over our heads out to church. The room is real quiet. Deacon Thorogood got his eyes locked a few inches above our heads. It's strange. He ain't a man not to look you in the eye. Everybody's staring at him, everybody wondering what he's thinking, so that he can't look in our faces. Then I see Yule May shaking her head real small, but like she mean it, and I reckon the deacon and Yule May is thinking the same thing. They thinking about what Jessup asked, and Yule May, she just answering the question. The meeting ends around 8 o'clock. The ones who got kids go on. Others get ourselves coffee from the table in the back. There ain't much chatter. People quiet. I take a breath, go to Yule May standing at the coffee urn. I just want to get this lie off that's stuck on me like a cockle burr. I ain't going to ask nobody else at the meeting. Ain't nobody going to buy my stinky smell good tonight. Yule May nod at me, smile, polite. She about 40 and tall and thin. She done kept her figure nice. She's still wearing her white uniform, and it fit trim on her waist. She always wear earrings, tiny gold loops. I hear the twins is going to Tougaloo College next year. Congratulations. We hope so. We still got a little more to save. Two at once is a lot. You went to a good bit of college yourself, didn't you? She nods, say, Jackson College. I loved school. The reading and the writing, except the arithmetic. I didn't take to that. Yule May smiles. The English was my favorite, too, the writing. I've been, writing some myself. Yule May looked me in the eye, and I can tell then she know what I'm about to say. For a second, I can see the shame she swallow every day. Working in that house. The fear. I feel embarrassed to ask her. But you may say it before I have to. I know about the stories you're working on. With that friend of Miss Hilly's. It's all right, you may, I know you can't do it. It's just a risk I can't afford to take right now. We're so close to getting enough money together. I understand, I say, and I smile, letting know she off the hook. But you and May don't move away. The names, you changing them, I heard? This is the same question everybody asks because they're curious. That's right, and the name of the town, too. She looked down at the floor. So I'd tell my stories about being a maid, and she'd write them down, edit them, or something like that. I nod. We want to do all kind of stories, good things and bad. She working with another maid right now. Yule May lick her lips, look like she imagining it, telling what it's like to work for Miss Hilly. Could we talk about this some more? When I have more time? Of course, I say. And I see in her eyes, she ain't just being nice. I'm sorry, but Henry and the boys are waiting on me, she says. But may I call you and talk in private? Anytime, whenever you feel like it. She touched my arm and looked me straight in the eyes again. I can't believe what I see. It's like she's been waiting on me to ask her all this time. Then she gone out the door. I stand in the corner a minute, drinking coffee too hot for the weather. I laugh and mutter to myself, even though everybody gonna think I'm even crazier for it.
Minnie, Chapter 17. Go on out of here so I can do my cleaning. Miss Celia draws the covers up around her chest like she's afraid I might jerk her out of bed. 9 months here, and I still don't know if she's sick in the body or fried up her wits with the hair coloring. She does look better than when I started. Her tummy's got a little fat on it. Her cheeks aren't so hollow as they were, out here starving her and Mr. Johnny to death. For a while, Miss Celia was working in the backyard all the time, but now that crazy lady's back to sitting around the bed again. I used to be glad she stayed holed up in her room. Now that I've met Mr. Johnny, though, I'm ready to work. And damn it, I'm ready to get Miss Celia in shape, too. You driving me crazy hanging around this house 24 hours a day. Get. Go chop down that pole mimosa tree you hate so much, I say, because Mr. Johnny never did chop that thing down. But when Miss Celia doesn't move from that mattress, I know it's time to pull out the big gun. When you gonna tell Mr. Johnny about me? Because that always gets her moving. Sometimes I just ask it for my own entertainment. I can't believe the charade has gone on this long with Mr. Johnny knowing about me and Miss Celia walking around like a ding-a-ling, like she's still pulling her trick. It was no surprise when the Christmas deadline came and she begged for more time. Oh, I railed her about it. But then the fool started boo-hooing, so I let her off the hook so she'd shut up, told her it was her Christmas present. She ought to get a stocking chock full of coal for all the lies she told. Thank the Lord Miss Hilly hasn't showed up here to play bridge, even though Mr. Johnny tried to set it up again just 2 weeks ago. I know, because Abilene told me she heard Miss Hilly and Miss Lefo laughing about it. Miss Celia got all serious, asking me what to cook if they come over. Ordered a book in the mail to learn the game, Bridge for the Beginner. I ought to call it Bridge for the Brainless. When it came this morning, in the mailbox, she didn't read it for 2 seconds before she asked, "Will you teach me to play, Minnie? This bridge book doesn't make a lick of sense." "I don't know how to play no bridge," I said. "Yes, you do. How you know what I can do?" I started banging pots around, irritated just by the looks of that stupid red cover. I finally got Mr. Johnny out the way, and now I have to worry about Miss Hilly coming over and ratting me out. She'll tell Miss Celia what I did for sure. Shoot, I'd fire my own self for what I did. Because Mrs. Walters told me you used to practice with her on Saturday mornings. I started scrubbing the big pot. My knuckles hit the sides, making a clanging noise. "Playing cards is the devil's game," I said. "And I got too much to do already. But I'll get all flustered with those girls over here trying to teach me. Won't you just show me a little?" "No." Miss Celia hummed out a little sigh. It's 'cause I'm such a bad cook, isn't it? You think I can't learn anything now? What you gonna do if Miss Hilly and them ladies tell your husband you got a maid out here? Ain't that gonna blow your cover? I've already worked that out. I'll tell Johnny I'm bringing in some help for the day, so it'll look proper and all for the other ladies. Mm-hmm. Then I'll tell him I like you so much, I want to hire you full-time. I mean, I could tell him that in a few months. I started to sweat then. When you think them ladies is coming over for your bridge party? I'm just waiting for Hilly to call me back. Johnny told her husband I'd be calling. I left her two messages, so I'm sure she'll call me back any time now. I stand there trying to think of something to stop this from happening. I look at the phone. Pray it never rings again. The next morning when I get in for work, Miss Celia comes out of her bedroom. I think she's about to sneak upstairs, which she starts to do again, but I hear her on the kitchen telephone asking for Miss Hilly. I get a sick, sick feeling. I was just calling again to see about getting a bridge game together, she says all cheerful, and I don't move until I know it's Eula May, Hilly's maid she's talking to, and not Miss Hilly herself. Miss Celia spells out her telephone number like a floor mopping jingle. Emerson 26609. And half a minute later, she's calling up another name from the back of that stupid paper like she's gotten into the habit of doing every other day. I know what that thing is. It's the newsletter from the Ladies League, and from the looks of it, she found it in the parking lot of that ladies' club. It's rough as sandpaper and wilted like it sat in a rainstorm after blowing out of somebody's pocketbook. So far, not one of those girls has ever called her back. But every time that phone rings, she jumps on it like a dog on a coon. It's always Mr. Johnny. All right, just tell her I called again, Miss Celia says into the phone. I hear her hanging up real soft. If I cared, which I don't, I'd tell those ladies ain't worth it. Those ladies ain't worth it, Miss Celia, I hear myself saying. But she acts like she can't hear me. She goes back to the bedroom and closes the door. I think about knocking, see if she needs anything. But I've got more important things to worry about than if Miss C has won the damn popularity contest. What, with Mega ever shot on his own doorstep and Felicia clamoring for her driver's license? Now that she turned 15, she's a good girl. But I got pregnant with Leroy Jr. when I wasn't much older than her, and a Buick has something to do with it. And on top of all that, now I've got Miss Skeeter and her stories to worry about. At the end of June, a heat wave of 100 degrees moves in and doesn't budge. It's like a hot water bottle plopped on top of the colored neighborhood, making it 10 degrees worse than the rest of Jackson. It's so hot, Mr. Dunn's rooster walks in my door and squats his red self right in front of my kitchen fan. I come in to find him looking at me like, I ain't moving nowhere, lady. He'd rather get beat with a broom than go back out in that nonsense. Out in Madison County, the heat officially makes Miss Celia the laziest person in the U.S. of A. She won't even get the mail out of the box anymore. I have to do it. It's even too hot for Miss Celia to sit out at the pool, which is a problem for me. See, I think if God had intended for white people and colored people to be this close together for so much of the day, he would have made us colorblind. And while Miss Celia's grinning and good morning and glad to seeing me, I'm wondering, how does she get this far in life without knowing where the lines are drawn? I mean, a floozy calling the society ladies is bad enough. But she has sat down and eaten lunch with me every single day since I started working here. I don't mean in the same room. I mean at the same table. That little one up under the window. Every white woman I've ever worked for ate in the dining room as far away from the colored help as they could, and that was fine with me. But why? I don't want to eat in there all by myself when I can eat in here with you, Miss Celia said. I didn't even try to explain it to her. There are so many things Miss Celia is just plain ignorant about. Every other white woman always knows that there is a time of the month when you do not talk to many. Even Miss Walters knew when the Mentimeter was running hot. She'd smell the caramel cooking and cane herself right out the door. Wouldn't even let Miss Hilly come over. Last week, the sugar and the butter had filled Miss Celia's whole house with the smell of Christmas, even though it was the crying shame of June. I was tense as usual, turning my sugar to caramel. I asked her 3 times, very politely, if I couldn't do this by myself, but she wanted to be in there with me. Said she was getting lonely being in her bedroom all the day long. I tried to ignore her. Problem was, I have to talk to myself when I make a caramel cake, or else I get too jittery. I said, "Hottest day in June history, 104 outside." And she said, "Do you have air conditioning? Thank goodness we have it here, because I grew up without it, and I know what it's like being hot." And I said, "Can't afford no air conditioning. Them things eat current like a boll weevil on cotton." And I started stirring hard because the brown was just forming on the top, and that's when you really got to watch it. And I say, "We already late on the light bill, because I'm not thinking straight." And do you know what she said? She said, "Oh, Minnie, I wish I could loan you the money, but Johnny's been asking all these funny questions lately." And I turned to inform her that every time a Negro complained about the cost of living didn't mean she was begging for money. But before I could say a word, I'd burned up my damn caramel. At Sunday church service, Shirley Boone gets up in front of the congregation. With her lips flapping like a flag, she reminds us that the community concerns meeting is Wednesday night to discuss a sit-in at the Woolworth's lunch counter on Amit Street. Big nosy Shirley points her finger at us and says, "The meeting is at 7. Be on time. No excuses." She reminds me of a big, white, ugly school teacher, the kind nobody ever wants to marry. "You coming on Wednesday?" asks Abilene. We're walking home in the 3 o'clock heat. I got my funeral fan in my fist. I'm waving it so fast it looks like it's got a motor on it. "I ain't got time," I say. "You gonna make me go by myself again? Come on, I'm gonna bring some gingerbread and some..." "I said I can't go." Abilene nods, says, "All right then." She keeps walking. Bennett might get the asthma again. I don't want to leave him. "Mm-hmm," Abilene says. "You tell me the real reason when you're ready." We turn on Guessum, walk around a car that's plumbed out of heat stroke in the road. "Oh, before I forget, Miss Skeeter wants to come over early Tuesday night," Abilene says. "About 7. You make it then?" "Lord," I say, getting irritated all over again. "What am I doing? I must be crazy, giving the sworn secrets of the colored race to a white lady." "It's just Miss Skeeter. She ain't like the rest." "Feel like I'm talking behind my own back," I say. "I've met with Miss Skeeter at least 5 times now. It's not getting any easier." "You want to stop coming?" Abilene asks. "I don't want you to feel like you have to." I don't answer her. "You still there, Em?" she says. "I want things to be better for the kids," I say. "But it's a sorry fact that it's a white woman doing this. Come to the community meeting with me on Wednesday. We talk more about it then," Abilene says with a little smile. I knew Abilene wouldn't drop it. I sigh. I got in trouble, all right. "With who?" "Shirley Boone," I say. "Last meeting, everybody was holding hands and praying they gonna let blacks in the white bathroom and talking about how they gonna sit down on a stool at Woolworth's and not fight back. And they all smiling like this world gonna be a shiny new place. And I popped. I told Shirley Boone her ass won't fit on no stool at Woolworth's anyway." "What'd Shirley say?" I pull out my teacher lady voice.
"If you can't say nothing nice, then you ought not say nothing at all."
When we get to her house, I look over at Abilene. She's holding down a laugh so hard she gone purple. "It ain't funny," I say. "I am glad you're my friend, Minnie Jackson." And she gives me a big hug until I roll my eyes and until I have to go. I keep walking and turn at the corner. I didn't want Abilene to know that. I didn't want anybody to know how much I need those Skeeter stories. Now that I can't come to the Shirley Boone meetings anymore, that's pretty much all I got. And I'm not saying the Miss Skeeter meetings are fun. Every time we meet, I complain, I moan, I get mad and throw a hot potato fit. But here's the thing. I like telling my stories. It feels like I'm doing something about it. When I leave, the concrete in my chest has loosened, melted down so I can breathe for a few days. And I know there are plenty of other colored things I could do besides telling my stories or going to Shirley Boone's meetings, the mass meetings in town, the marches in Birmingham, the voting rallies upstate. But truth is, I don't care that much about voting. I don't care about eating at a counter with white people. What I care about is if in 10 years a white lady will call my girls dirty and accuse them of stealing the silver. At home that night, I get the butter beans simmering, the ham in the skillet. "Kendra, get everybody in here," I say to my 6-year-old. "We ready to eat." "Supper!" Kendra yells, not moving an inch from where she's standing. "You go get your daddy the proper way," I yell. "What'd I tell you about yelling in my house?" Kendra rolls her eyes at me like she just been asked to do the stupidest thing in the world. She stamps her feet down the hall. "Supper! Kendra!" The kitchen is the only room in the house we can all fit in together. The rest are set up as bedrooms. Me and Leroy's room is in the back. Next to that is a little room for Leroy Jr. and Benny, and the front living room has been turned into a bedroom for Felicia, Sugar, and Kendra. So all that leaves is the kitchen. Unless it's crazy cold outside, our back door stays open with the screen door shut to keep out the flies. All the time, there's a row of kids and cars and neighbors and dogs barking. Leroy comes in and sits at the table next to Benny, who's 7. Felicia fills up the glasses with milk or water. Kendra carries a plate of beans and ham to her daddy and comes back to the stove for more. I hand her another plate. "This one for Benny," I say. "Benny, get up and help your mama," Leroy says. "Benny got the asthma. He don't need to be doing nothing." But my sweet boy gets up anyway, takes the plate from Kendra. My kids know how to work. They all sit at the table except me. 3 children are home tonight. Leroy Jr., who's a senior at Lanier High, is bagging groceries at the Jitney 14. That's the white grocery store over in Miss Hilly's neighborhood. Sugar, my oldest girl, in 10th grade, babysits for our neighbor Tallulah, who works late. When Sugar's finished, she'll walk home and drive her daddy to the late shift at the pipe fitting plant, then pick up Leroy Jr. from the grocery. Leroy Sr. will get a ride from the plant at 4 in the morning with Tallulah's husband. It all works out. Leroy eats, but his eyes are on the Jackson Journal next to his plate. He's not exactly known for his sweet nature when he wakes up. I glance over from the stove and see that the sit-in at Brown's Drugstore is the front page news. It's not Shirley's group, it's people from Greenwood. A bunch of white teenagers stand behind the 5 protesters on their stools, jeering and jabbing, pouring ketchup and mustard and salt all over their heads. "How they do that?" Felicia points at the picture. "Sit there without fighting back." "That's what they supposed to do," says Leroy. "I feel like spitting looking at that picture," I say. "We talk about it later." Leroy folds the paper in quarters and tucks it under his thigh. Felicia says to Benny, not quiet enough, "Good thing Mama wasn't up on one of them stools, else none of them white folks had any teeth left." "And Mama be in the parchment jail," says Benny for everybody to hear. Kendra props her arm up on her hip. "Nuh-uh, ain't nobody putting my mama in jail. I beat those white people with a stick till they bleed." Leroy points his finger at every one of them. "I don't want to hear a word about it outside this house. It's too dangerous. You hear me, Benny? Felicia?" Then he points his finger at Kendra. "You hear me?" Benny and Felicia nod their heads, look down at the plates. I'm sorry I started all this and give Kendra the keep it shut look. But little Miss Something slaps her fork down on the table, climbs out of her chair. "I hate white people, and I'm gonna tell everybody if I want to." I chase her down the hall. When I catch her, I potato sack her back to the table. "I'm sorry, Daddy," Felicia says, because she the kind that's gonna take the blame for everyone every time. And I look after Kendra. She don't know what she's saying. But Leroy smack his hand on the table. "Nobody's getting in that mess. Y'all hear me?" and he stares his children down. I turn to the stove so he can't see my face. Lord help me if he finds out what I'm doing with Miss Skeeter. All the next week, I hear Miss Celia on her bedroom phone, leaving messages at Miss Hiller's house, Elizabeth Leafolk's house, Miss Parker's house, both Caldwell sisters, and 10 other society ladies. Even Miss Skeeter's house, which I don't like one bit. I told Miss Skeeter myself, don't even think about calling her back. Don't tangle up this web any more than it already is. The irritating part is, after Miss Celia makes these stupid calls and hangs up the phone, she picks that receiver right back up. She listens for a dial tone in case the line doesn't go free. Ain't nothing wrong with that phone, I say. She just keeps smiling at me, like she's been doing for a month now, like she's got a pocket full of paper money. Why are you in such a good mood? I finally ask her. Mr. John being sweet or something? I'm loading up my next, when you gonna tell? But she beats me to it. Oh, he's being sweet all right, she says. And it's not going to be much longer till I tell him about you. Good, I say, and I mean it. I'm sick of this lying game. I imagine how she must smile at Mr. Johnny when she hands him my pork chops, how that nice man has to act like he's so proud of her when he knows it's me doing the cooking. She's making a fool of herself, a fool of her nice husband, and a liar out of me. Minnie, would you mind fetching the mail for me? She asks, even though she's sitting here all dressed, and I've got butter on my hands and a washing machine and a motor blender going. She's like a Philistine on Sunday, the way she won't take but so many steps a day, except every day Sunday around here. I clean off my hands and head out to the box. Sweat half a gallon on the way. I mean, it's only 99 degrees outside. There's a 2-foot package sitting next to the mailbox in the grass. I've seen her with these big brown boxes before. Figure it's some kind of beauty cream she's ordering. But when I pick it up, it's heavy. Makes a tinkling sound like I'm toting Coca-Cola bottles. You got something, Miss Celia? I plop the box on the floor of the kitchen. I've never seen her jump up so fast. In fact, the only thing fast about Miss Celia is the way she dresses. It's just my... She mumbles something. She heaves the box all the way to her bedroom, and I hear the door slam. An hour later, I go back in the bedroom to suck the rugs. Miss C is not laying down, and she's not in the bathroom. I know she's not in the kitchen or the living room or at the pool, and I just dusted fancy parlor number 1 and number 2 and vacuumed the bear, which means she must be upstairs in the creepy rooms. Before I get fired for accusing Mr. White, manager, of wearing a hairpiece, I used to clean the ballrooms at the Robert E. Lee Hotel. Those big, empty rooms with no peoples and the lipstick napkins and the leftover smell of perfume gave me the chills. And so does the upstairs of Miss Celia's house. There's even an antique cradle with Mr. Johnny's old baby bonnet and a silver rattle that I swear I can hear tinkling sometime on its own accord. And it's thinking of that tinkling sound that makes me wonder if those boxes don't have something to do with her sneaking up to those rooms every other day. I decide it's time to go up there and take a look for myself. I keep an eye on Miss Celia the next day, waiting for her to sneak upstairs so I can see what she's up to. Around 2 o'clock, she sticks her head in the kitchen and gives me a funny smile. A minute later, I hear the squeak in the ceiling. Real easy, I head for the staircase. Even though I tiptoe, the dishes in the sideboard jangle, the floorboards groan. I walk so slowly up the stairs, I can hear my own breathing. At the top, I turn down the long hall. I pass wide open bedrooms, doors 1, 2, 3. Door number 4, down on the end, is closed except for an inch. I move in a little closer, and through the crack, I spot her. She's sitting on the yellow twin bed by the window, and she's not smiling. The package I toted in from the mailbox is open, and on the bed are a dozen bottles filled with brown liquid. It's a slow burn that rises up my bosoms, my chin, my mouth. I know the look of those flat bottles. I nursed a worthless pint drinker for 12 years, and when my lazy, life-sucking daddy finally died, I swore to God with tears in my eyes, I'd never marry one. And then I did. And now here I am nursing another goddamn drinker. These aren't even store-bought bottles. They have a red wax